Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Born and raised in Kansas City, he talks about what we talk about. The Chiefs.
If you can give Patrick Mahomes the ball right now before halftime, you can swing the momentum completely in your advantage.
The weather.
It's 60 degrees. I'm incredibly happy.
And like a great jazz trumpeter, he can hit the high notes.
It's only Tuesday.
All the wrong reasons?
Drew Lock has been 3-1. Pretty good. Got the Denver Broncos thinking about the future.
He's Nate Taylor of The Athletic.
What do you think about this?
On the program.
Hour number two begins right now with Nate Taylor, brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound, 913-498-1183. That's 913-498-1183. Find them on the web at applausetheater.com, whether it's that ultimate in-home theater, whether it's smart home technology, the ability to control anything from the touchscreen on your smartphone, anything in your home. How about one of the cool things they've got now? I got a button that they did just when they came in, doing a little add-on, an upgrade, and they set it up to where we press one button when we leave on vacation, and it takes the average of the last 7 days, right, and says, okay, here's what you do, and the lights come on and off. So it's like you're home all the time, right? That's how it works. Applause Custom Sight and Sound, just the tip of the iceberg. Check them out online at applausetheater.com or call 913-498-1183. We welcome Nate Taylor to the T-Mobile guest line. Nate, how are you, sir?
Oh, my usual self on a dreary Monday afternoon, just, you know, getting ready for our whole Thanksgiving in a completely different way. But how are you, Sarin?
I'm doing good. I like that. Yes, I think, you know, most of us are having some discussions about how this Thanksgiving thing is going to work. Are you having perhaps a dessert swap on one of your family members' driveways?
Oh. We are more sides related at the moment. I really haven't heard about desserting. Now, I will say, where I am in Overland Park, I go to the Upper Crust Lovely Bakery, and I already got my pie, so I'm good on that front. But, yeah, man, a lot of Zoom, a lot of FaceTime, a lot of phone calls, and hopefully I'll get to watch some football on Thursday.
Yeah, right? The idea has been one of my one of the guys who grew up with my wife suggested the idea, so we're kind of putting that together. So I think that'll be fun, a chance for everyone to at least see each other outside. What is it supposed to, that's supposed to be the nicest day this week, isn't it?
I don't know, man.
58, like, yes.
Yeah, I look at the forecast, but we all know far too well. Game's still early. We ain't even at halftime of what Thursday could be from a temperature standpoint. So I hope it's warm. I hope people are able to go out and kind of see each other in, you know, open air. But, hey, you know, if you have to make adjustments, please make the adjustments, because obviously we all want to stay healthy. So that maybe next Thanksgiving can be more traditional if things go the way that, you know, we're being told by scientists and people in the know.
I'm more optimistic. I'm shooting more like next 4th of July.
Like, I think that would be incredible. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
No, I know it's an unbelievable task that's at hand to vaccinate 300 plus million people, or at least those of us that are going to get vaccinated. I've said the whole time, I have confidence in mankind, right? That if everybody working together, that they will come together and get it done. And so far, they're delivering on everything they said they would do. So let's hope they've got a good plan on putting it together. But, you know, I'll shoot for the summer. And you know what? I'll be thrilled if we just have everybody back at school in a normal fashion, right? I'll settle for that. That's good enough for me if we can get there.
Yeah, and I, like, one of the small guilty pleasures I want back is just to, like, go to Kauffman Stadium and, like, watch a baseball game with, you know, the boys or my family or friends from college, like I was supposed to do before the pandemic, you know, took over things. So, I mean, I think much like you, Sarin, both big and small, and the idea of a scientist a couple days ago saying, hey, we might have fans in baseball stadiums if, you know, if the vaccination is mobilized, if it's handled correctly, if people, like you said, are willing to take that step for the betterment of the, you know, of the population, then yeah, I mean, I just want to see balls and strikes, man. I want to argue against the refs or an umpire. You know, I want to be like, that's outside. You know, I would love to do that as well as eat, you know, Thanksgiving dinner traditionally with my family, because, you know, we had everybody in my family at my house last year, and that's not going to be the case because of, you know, 2020.
Sure. Yeah. No, I do. Well, that's, yeah, I hear you. And let's hope we're all working towards making it better as soon as possible. No doubt. We're talking to Nate Taylor from The Athletic. Let's talk about these Kansas City Chiefs. My first point I had to open the program was that I really actually think the Raiders gained a lot more from this game than the Chiefs. The Chiefs did what they needed to do, but we know the Chiefs are a championship contender. We know the Chiefs are either the number one or number two team in the NFL. So all they really kind of did was hold serve.
Yes.
And I think maybe even lost a little ground, because it's back-to-back games with their defense giving up 30. It's two games in, you know, back-to-back games with the Raiders where they gave up 30. So I think there's some real questions. I've got more questions now on the defensive side of the ball than I had before this game, whereas the Raiders kind of validated what they did in the first game. They're a legitimate playoff caliber team. Now, maybe because there's so many good teams in the AFC and the NFC is stinking it up so bad that they're going to, you know, be 10-6 and not get in there. But they're a legitimate team that's on the come. I actually think the Raiders in defeat proved more in this game amongst the two teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. You are so right about holding serve, because if the Chiefs would have got swept by the Raiders after winning a Super Bowl, where, you know, obviously it's their you know, their lofty expectations of trying to be repeat champions, that would have been pretty hefty on their resume going into the playoffs. Because if you look at the records, if you kind of project it out, hey, maybe 2-7. Hey, maybe you're the one seed and the Raiders win the first game, and who knows? Like, I kind of want to see a third round of this. But, I mean, I think there's one thing that the Chiefs accomplished on defense. Are you ready to hear it?
Oh, yes. Let's hear it.
With Henry Ruggs on the field, that's the one thing they accomplished, kids. Henry Ruggs didn't burn them deep. Everything else is a failure of massive sort of control. I mean, the idea that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu was tweeting it up last night, shout out to him, because, you know, this is for mostly Chiefs public relations staff. It'd be nice if we talked to a defensive player after they give up 31 points to your arch rival. Now, anyway, the defense has real issues, and the Raiders are starting to show more than anybody else in the league how to sort of be able to always have an advantage when you have the football, if your quarterback is just competent, right? Ben Roethlisberger, we all assume, is better than Derek Carr. Hey, do you have competent tight ends? Do you have a running back that is a legitimate threat out of the backfield, both receiving and catching, whether that's McCaffrey or Josh Jacobs? Hey, Daniel Sorensen, good player. Sometimes he not good. You know, Ben Neiman, sometimes he's pretty, you know, average in coverage. Other times he can get beat. Tyrann Mathieu had issues with Darren Waller. I know there's only one Darren Waller in the league, but there are ways to combat the Chiefs now that are more apparent than they were in September. And I don't care who Chris Jones is yelling at. Dog, y'all play like you know what on the defensive line. And I don't know if Chris Jones is hurt. I don't know if Frank Clark is hurt. But what we learned yesterday was more about the defense, and Patrick Mahomes is still freaking extraordinary, where it's just like, how many people in Kansas City were nervous when they're like, okay, 143, one timeout, down three. Like, we'll be fine. But, you know, there may be a chance in January where the roles are reversed, and I think that is the bigger question for the next, what, five games or so? Like, can the defense get back to being more championship reliable? Because clearly John Gruden has figured something out.
All right. You mentioned Chris Jones yelling. It's one of the things I had on my list to get to. Who do you think he was yelling at?
So my understanding is it's the age-old belief of, like, what's more at fault? Is it the coverage not holding up its bargain, or is it the defensive line not getting any pressure on the quarterback and therefore making the coverage essentially moot? I think that was the debate between Chris Jones and guys like Legarius Sneed and Charvarius Ward. The issue is that, hey, you know, the Chiefs secondary was, like, not good, but they weren't as awful as they were in the first meeting. Odd to say, but kind of true. And as I wrote in The Athletic today, the best plays for the Chiefs defense in the second half, Saran, were a drop by Nelson Aguilar, a drop by a fullback that I still don't know who his name is, and a second drop by that same fullback who I don't know who his name is. But they were all open. Derek Carr threw the ball on time with perfect delivery. That's the best thing I can say about the Chiefs defense. When you knew who you were playing against, this shouldn't have been a surprise. The whole fool me once, you know, sort of genre of, you know, how we analyze, you know, football. But ultimately, I think Chris Jones is like, hey, man, we're trying the best we can. And so, of course, if you're any human being at a highly competitive level of football, you're like, we're trying to cover Nelson Aguilar as well. Have you seen Darren Waller? It'd be more helpful if, I don't know, Derek Carr was like a little nervous in the pocket. Or this goes to maybe more of an upper level, Steve Spagnuolo, Matt House, Brendan Daly. NBC showed in great detail, Sarin, that Derek Carr knew everything. Like, even the adjustments he kind of foresaw. And so you always want Patrick Mahomes to have that advantage. If the other quarterback has that advantage, well, you know, things get a little tricky. The game gets a little tighter. And at no point did Derek Carr feel like, oh, I'm seeing something that I haven't seen before. This is four games now with Steve Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator. And it got to the fourth game where Derek Carr kind of knew everything that he was going to see up until the final drive, where obviously it's becoming desperation and we got to push the ball down the field.
And I'm happy to talk about Spagnuolo, and certainly he's the guy that's ultimately responsible. So it falls on his desk. I think there's no doubt about that. But I want to back up to, you said Legarius Sneed and Charvarius Ward, right? Like, Ward was the guy that I saw there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Legarius.
So hang on. Legarius Sneed, rookie fourth-round draft pick.
Right.
Charvarius Ward, third-year player, not drafted, into the league and acquired for a guy that you were going to cut. Now, we know his stature has risen well beyond that.
Right.
Right, but we also know your check is a lot of who you are in a locker room. Chris Jones, $20-plus million man, being called out or questioned by a rookie fourth-rounder and a guy who's making the league minimum.
Yeah.
That usually does not happen. Right? That to me is very interesting. And I'm not trying to make more of it than it is, but you've been in locker rooms. You've been in NFL and NBA locker rooms. I've been in probably baseball, too. I mean, I don't know what all different assignments you've had, but you know, I've been in a lot of locker rooms for every sport, as a matter of fact, back in the old days for hockey and the NBA as well. And, like, you don't – guys not making nothing, don't pipe off to guys making big bucks. Like, there is kind of a pecking order and a hierarchy. And if they were of the mindset that they had room to talk right there, then them's some pissed off DBs.
Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, too, Legarius Sneed, this is his first game back from a broken collarbone, okay? Like, Charvarius Ward played most of this year with basically a hand and a half, okay, depending on where he was in his rehab on his left fractured hand. You are so right, Sarin. Like, it needs to be discussed. We don't want to make it as bigger than it is, but it's kind of a big deal because it's the first true outburst that we've seen on the defensive side of the ball all year. So it's clearly something we should – you know, note in our notebooks and see how it goes from here on out.
Is it a problem? Just to clarify that, is it a problem now? No, it's not a problem. It's a volatile game.
No.
It's an intense game. Guys get fired up. But it's a note. It is a note. And I'll go you a step further. Like whatever the discussion may be, I'm sure it was like, hey, you guys got to cover somebody. Hey, jackass, you got to hit the quarterback, right? I'm sure boil it down, that's what it ultimately comes down to. And if you want to go further, and I know there's been a number of stats about how many times Chris Jones has been double teamed, and this is often used as a, you know, a successful, like, look, see, he's worth it type of deal. Listen, if you are going to take up all the oxygen in the room, or in this case, all the salary on the salary cap, then you can't be like, well, there's no one next to me that's good enough to that they have to worry about, so I get double teamed on every snap. Yes, and it's like that. because you take all the money.
Right.
So when you get double teamed, you still have to win against double teams. Him and Frank Clark don't get to come back to the defensive meetings.
Right.
And neither does Tyrann Mathieu, by the way, with his check, or Anthony Hitchens, because those are the four guys on that defense that get paid, and frankly, really the only four. Alex Okafor, I think, makes $4 million or something like that.
Yeah, right, right. He's in a different tier.
Which is like, money for the NFL right now on the defensive line, right? It's like he's, it's what, a 20% of what the maximum is for his position, right?
At
$21 million. So, he's not even highly paid basically by NFL standards. But none of those four guys can come into a meeting and be like, you guys aren't getting it done. No. You're the four guys that are supposed to kick ass. We're paid like the guys that are supposed to mop up what's left, right? Like, so you don't get to bark at the seventh-round pick and the sixth-round pick and the fourth-round pick and the $2 million free agent that they need to do their job. Their job is to pick up the scraps from your two $40 million asses up front.
Right. And you have to remember, too, like, for players like Sneed and Ward, like, it's scheme-based. Like, there are players who fit a specific role within the specific scheme, and there are certain plays where, yes, they can have highlights, or if the ball's a 50-50 ball, hey, go get it to the best of your ability. But from an optic standpoint, I don't know who's in the right. I don't know who's in the wrong. Because, again, we talked to nobody on the defensive side of the ball after the game via Zoom. So, regardless of that, from an optic standpoint, it's terrible for Chris Schoell. Terrible. Because those guys are trying just as hard as you, we all assume. Derek Carr was on fire. And sometimes in the NFL, the quarterback's on fire. You know how to stop that? Get some level of pressure. Get some level of contact. Bring the quarterback to the ground. There's a reason the previous owner of the Raiders said the quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. That owner did not say the wide receiver needs to be smothered, and he must only be smothered. Like, there's rules to this, and the rule and the foundation and all of it is the quarterback has to feel pressure. You have to make an impact on the negative side to give the rest of your defensive teammates the best chance possible. Now, clearly there are guys like Deion Sanders, Ed Reed, we can go on down the line, but for Chris Jones to be at this veteran level, to be this much of a leader on the team, to question guys in a manner that is just, that again, from an optic standpoint, just looks wrong. Because there needs to be a time to encourage. There needs to be a time to see what the adjustment is instead of just barking at somebody because you haven't gotten, you know, your highlight on tape yet and the idea that the Raiders are maybe double-teaming you to prevent you from having a highlight. But, look, you want to compare yourself to Aaron Donald. You know what Aaron Donald does? Beats double teams often,
yeah,
all the time. And there's a true difference in all of this. And I think moving forward, the biggest onus on the defense, I'm confident in Tyrann Mathieu still. Because it feels like the Raiders have figured out something schematically for their player personnel that really doesn't even involve Tyrann. Like, Tyrann had, like, four chances yesterday. So, again, shout-out to John Gruden and Derek Carr knows where the holes are. The bigger emphasis now on defense is, can Frank Clark and Chris Jones repeat what they did in December and January last year? And whether that answer is true or not will have a large impact on if the Chiefs repeat as champions.
When guys wearing 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s are being brought on blitzes, the guys wearing the 90s, and I know Frank Clark wears a 55,
right?
But the guys wearing the 90s aren't getting it done.
Yep.
And so, you know, hey, we can't cover everyone while we're also doing your job blitzing.
Yes.
You know, that's the phrase. Who was – I'll ask you this. Who was the best defensive lineman on the field?
I still think – people will like
last night, not career achievement or
right.
Who last night was the best defensive lineman on the field?
I think there were some things that Frank Clark did that won't show up on the stat sheet that are still fundamentally.
Well, they definitely weren't on the stat sheet because he could have been left off of it, frankly.
And then I would say another candidate of the two, like Derek Nnadi.
I would say it was Max Crosby. A fourth round pick.
I thought you were talking from the Chiefs standpoint. No, Max Crosby was he a player. Max Crosby is good. By the way, you could tell he studies tape because he started to see tendencies from the Chiefs offense and was able to sort of counteract a couple of them. So, no, Max Crosby's good. I thought you were asking more on the Chiefs defensive line. But look, Maybe it's time to give Colin Saunders some run, you know. Mike Dana, clearly gone back to, like, being a rookie, you know, instead of, like, an emerging one because he kind of got worked last night. Tano Passanio was fine. He actually gave a pretty good effort on Witten's touchdown, but, hey, you know, it goes that way as a defensive player in this league. But, no, there was no one super impressive on the defensive line. I just think Frank Clark is the most technically sound so that he doesn't make gaping mistakes or, you know, go off on his teammates and then go offsides on a touchdown drive twice, you know.
Yes, so, I agree with that. And he sets the edge really well, which, to your point, I know that's what you were getting at when you talk about the things that don't show up statistically. We need to take a break, but I'll say this and then we'll break, and that is CBS had the numbers 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe it was 5 or 6, time flies, about what the numbers are when Chris Jones is on the field and what the numbers are when he's off the field. And I think it's time for that to become a relevant discussion, right? Because, and it's not that Chris Jones can't play. I want to be clear about that.
Right.
It's just that, like, okay, what are, when you go, it's the same thing that the PFF guys talk about, why you don't pay a running back big money or why you don't draft a running back in the first round, because then you feel compelled to justify the pick or the expenditure, and you run it way more than you should when passing is much more efficient. Well, I think there might be a little bit of, well, Chris Jones is out there, so we paid him all this money, this is how we're going to do things. And I think they need to look at, is that not – the money spent, whether you like it or not, there's no need to try to justify it. You need to come up with what is the best for the team to play. And I thought last year when Chris Jones was out, you know, I joked about it with Eager. I called it 2 fatties and a blitz. When they put Colin Saunders and Mike Pinnell out there and Derek Nnadi, those two of those three out there in the middle, and then come in with pressure, you know, from different spots, a different blitzer each time, they had a lot of success with that. And, you know, they've got to get back to finding, you know, what is successful on that side of the ball. So the numbers have said that they're better with Chris Jones off the field. That's what CBS's numbers said. I have to believe that that's – the job that Steve Spagnuolo needs to do is how to make him even better with Chris Jones on there, right? That's what needs to happen.
And how to motivate him the right way so that, again, if you give up a touchdown, focus on the next drive, not what just occurs.
Right. We'll take a break. Nate Taylor from The Athletic is with us. He's brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. You can check out their great work online at applausetheater.com.
The program with Soren Petro.
I forgot the question. I do that a lot.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Good Sense end of the hour question. I didn't ask it this way, but I should have. Who was the last team to beat the Chiefs twice in the regular season? Saran, Nate Taylor?
I just think probably the Broncos.
Peyton Manning.
You both are all over it. It was 2014, the Denver Broncos. Both of you guys are going to Jazz, apparently, on me. Or to Good Sense.
Good
Excuse
sense.
Me.
Good Sense, yeah. Good Sense. By the way, you can order the Good Sense like I did this weekend online at GoodSenseSubs.com. Use the app, even easier. Put your favorites in there. That's the easiest way. Our family can literally order in about 20 seconds, and we are off and running. They'll deliver it to you. You can pick it up curbside, slicing the meats and cheeses fresh right in front of you. The freshest sandwich you're going to get is right there at Good Sense. Bake the bread twice each day. Founded in Lenexa, Kansas. That's your neighborhood Good Sense. Get it today. Make sure you're part of that loyalty club. 10% back. It's the best deal going. What are you waiting for? Nate Taylor is with us from The Athletic. Nate, so what does your gut tell you? Is there defensive problems or is it just a blip?
There are some defensive problems. I kind of want to hedge, but I'm leaning more towards defensive problems because I just think these are things that can be transferable to the Buccaneers, to the Saints, particularly, hey, y'all, be fearful of Alvin Kamara against this defense. No matter who the quarterback is, whether it's Drew Brees or Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, like I can't wait to watch Alvin Kamara against this defense because top-level player in the middle of the field. Let's see where the team is going to be from an assignment standpoint, like who's going to be covering that guy who's going to be most responsible for him. I think there are transferable things. You know, again, the one thing they accomplished, Henry Ruggs didn't beat them deep. No one truly beat them deep outside of a very good throw from, you know, Derek Carr in the corner of the end zone to Nelson Aguilar. Still, you know, in the picture was Bashaud Breeland, who I think had his first bad game of the season. But you know, there are things that you can really mark down and say, I think the Buccaneers can do this. I think the Saints can do this. I don't have any faith in the Broncos, so like whatever. But like, you know, the next couple real matchups are going to be a real test for this defense.
They are going to be a real test, and the games aren't easy. Bucks, Dolphins, or Bucks, Broncos. Broncos would be easy. If the Broncos aren't easy, there's real problems.
Right.
I'll say that right now. And then is it Dolphins, Saints, or Saints, Dolphins? I forget which
one. I can't remember, but it's, you know.
People to know, I'll look it up here real quick. but the it is Dolphins, Saints.
Okay.
So at Bucks, home for Broncos, at Dolphins, at Saints. They got to get some things fixed, and I think they will. It's a good coaching staff. They fixed it last year. I think there's a lot of reason to be very confident that they'll get it fixed again. And who knows? Maybe you know, Derek Carr can send it down the field a lot further than Tom Brady can.
Yes, this is true. We're gonna see tonight, right? Because the Buccaneers play tonight. My memory correct? So we'll see tonight.
Post the Rams.
Yeah, so Chiefs fans should watch that game, as will I. But, you know, I think they have, again, some tall guys, you know. They have still Rob Gronkowski, who's a threat in the red zone. You got to respect that. Tom Brady's not going to, like, light it up downfield, I wouldn't say necessarily. But, you know, a guy to keep an eye on, because he wasn't on my mind until, like, maybe the early second quarter, where I just kept getting messages from people on Twitter, and I was like, guys, I understand this, and then I kept waiting, and I was like, maybe Michelle Tafoya's got something that we don't have, you know, on my couch. And it's like, wow, Juan Thornhill really isn't in the game plan. And I don't know if he's having some residual effect with his knee. Andy Reid said he was fine and that it was mostly game plan related, but again, I don't know how Daniel Sorensen can be on the field and not Juan Thornhill. Like, those two dudes, like, kind of complement one another along with Tyrann Mathieu. So just be mindful of what is next for Juan Thornhill, whether he gets back to his normal snap count or whether this is something that the coaching staff has sort of realized that maybe his eyes aren't as disciplined as they would like.
Didn't seem to help, okay? Like, that didn't seem to be the answer, taking him off the field, whatever the problem they thought they saw was.
No, and I will say this, you know, Juan didn't have a ton of opportunities too, but he did make a home run saving tackle in the middle of the field, and on an intermediate route that could have gone a lot further had he not made the tackle. So I think Juan Thornhill is a really good player. It's really good if you don't mention his name, but like, it is weird when you come after the bye week, when you think like, hey, for a guy who's dealing with coming back from an ACL, that extra rest should give him a little bit of an uptick in terms of the boost of his health, and to just not start him is odd. But again, we will, I guess, ask these questions on Thursday. Hopefully if we get Steve Spagnuolo, he can kind of give us a better idea of what they were thinking. But yeah, I think Montano needs to be on the field the majority of the time, unless there's some really odd circumstance.
Do we need to have everyone start preparing that the games are going to look like this, or they're going to be clunkier on offense?
Yes.
When...
Yes, they're in. Yes.
You don't even know where I'm going.
No, I feel it. I feel it telepathically. I know what you're about to say, sir.
When Patrick Mahomes' contract starts to balloon, they're just not going to be able to carry all the talent that they're carrying right now.
Yeah, and if Andy Reid decides that we don't want to show the entire playbook, or I told you last night on the pregame show, I thought they were going to, like, blow out the Raiders, like, by 20 points. Whew, that was bad. Because I thought they were going to open up the playbook more, and I thought they were going to be really ultra-aggressive on offense. And maybe, you know, the Raiders are fine. They're fine on defense. They're not great, but they're fine, competent. But maybe Andy and Eric's point, Eric Bieniemy, was just like, we just have to systematically move the football down the field. Because that's probably what you are going to have to do in January. And it is definitely what you're going to have to do 2 years from now, when you really are starting to see the effects of Patrick Mahomes' deal. And, I think last night was the end of the fun part of the season. Like, The September is like, oh, my God, football, so great. Like, I'm just so happy. We're 50 jams. And then October gets into, like, fun. Like, hey, that's cool. Hey, that's fun. Like, Let's throw out these cool plays. Hey, Dan Sorensen's playing out of his freaking mind. Into November, it gets a little like, you know, hey, I can start to see the end of the line for the regular season. And then at the exact moment where the Chiefs are in Thanksgiving, that they just got through the Raiders, every game from here on out is going to be a dogfight. Like, the Denver Broncos should play better. But, I mean, they should still lose. But, like, the Denver Broncos should play better because they got to worry about next season. The Miami Dolphins are in a playoff hunt. And, yes, their quarterback, you know, had his first real dip. We'll see how he responds. I think we'll see Tua Tagovailoa in coming weeks. And, look, the Saints are the most desperate team in the NFL. How can we get these wins? How much money can I put on layaway? I don't care what my salary cap looks like. When can Drew Brees be back? We got to get to the Super Bowl. So that game is going to be ultra fascinating because the Chiefs and the Saints are two of the more desperate teams about the objective of this season. So the games are going to get closer regardless. They're going to get, you know, they're going to be more opportunities for Patrick Mahomes to do what he did last night moving forward. I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah, and that is the good news. And Andy Reid said it when he stepped to the podium. I got Patrick Mahomes. And
yep.
And that is the ultimate get out of jail free card. Now, you want to do everything you can to, you know, not have to play him four times to get to the Super, you know, to win the Super Bowl, to get that bye week, just eliminates all the random static, right? We know he's not going to win the next 20 Super Bowls. He's going to be the best quarterback on the field for, or even the next 10. He figures to be the best quarterback on the field for the next 10 years, but there are going to be times when he loses, like when Derek Carr and the Raiders beat him. You know, like Tom Brady was better than Alex Smith, but Alex Smith could beat Tom Brady. There are you know, other factors that are there beyond just the quarterback. You want to limit how many times, you've got to put it all on Patrick Mahomes' shoulders. But I do think, like, look, he's counting $5 million against the cap right now,
and that's gonna
change starting next year when it goes to 20 something, and so it's gonna get harder. I think the one thing that I look at, you know, from what I'm seeing right now is, and it's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that I've said, you know, no on Justin Houston, no on Eric Berry, and no on Frank Clark trade, and no on Chris Jones. I think the one thing they've got to do is they've got to protect him, and they've got to give him weapons. I just think, you know, the game is an offensive game, and that cap better start leaning way over towards the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, I watched how effective that Raiders offensive line was. And that's one thing. Listen, I will stand up for Frank Clark and Chris Jones and say I think that's the best offensive line in football. And, you know, they got the highest paid center. They got a first-round draft pick at left tackle. They've invested in that offensive line to make it what it is. And so that's one of the things I think the Chiefs have got to do this offseason. I know everyone's going to be like, well, the defense. Nope. Protect 15.
Yep.
Or get some protection in front of the guy, particularly when you're going to be picking at the bottom of each round. There's pretty good value at that offensive line position down there at the bottom of those, you know, first four rounds.
Yeah. We also have to remember, too, Mitchell Schwartz thought he was coming back. He ain't coming back for another 2.5 more weeks, right, because he's on IR because of his back injury. Eric Fisher really gutted through yesterday's game with some lower body stuff that I was told. Yeah, I mean, you know, just the idea that look what happened with Joe Burrow, okay? Joe Burrow is really good for where he was taken in the draft and the inexperience that he was obviously going to have to play in the NFL with no preseason whatsoever to really get himself physically and mentally prepared. We've known all season that the Bengals' offensive line is one of their greatest weaknesses. Their quarterback's done for the year because they failed to protect him. There will be books written about what the Colts did to Andrew Luck. Like, just chapters of mismanaging the draft or the cap or God knows what else. So, when you have a true diamond in Patrick Mahomes, you better make all those other diamonds around him. And that means that they're going to have to really flip this offensive line within the next, you know, 2 years, basically. Like, some guys will stay, some guys will go. Eric Fisher will be around. Maybe, you know, I think Mitchell Schwartz will be around next year. But there could be a lot of changes, even to somebody like Austin Ryder, right? The center who has the ability to help, you know, enhance their play-calling ability from a creative standpoint with how he can snap the football. But look, they're going to sign Stephen Wisniewski. If it's not today, I think it's going to be tomorrow. Everybody knows his story coming in last year in October, starting the last five games of the season, including the playoffs, playing very well. He is another, you know, insurance policy for this season. But they're doing moves like that, right? They're doing moves where can we get Martinez Rankin? Can we trade for him low? Can we see what we get in him? Can we get, you know, a veteran towards the end of his career in Kelechi Osemele? Can we get another guy like that who knows the offense and can come in the middle of the season if we're in real dire need? And look, they've only taken like one pick. I mean, Nick Allegretti is the most recent offensive lineman pick that's legitimate.
Well, Lucas Niang.
Yeah, this is where I was going to. Outside of Lucas Niang, who, you know, you have to see until next year because he took the, you know, yeah, he opted out. So yeah, it's complicated, but they're going to have to make some changes to, again, continue to put diamonds around the, you know, the big one in the center.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're talking to Nate Taylor from The Athletic. You can read his great work there. Well worth the price of the subscription. In fact, they send you a little email if you're like me, and the way I've got everything set up on my Athletic, where I get the front page. They send me all the
yes,
big
sir.
Stories that are out there. It's at The Athletic. We will take a break. We come back, we'll look ahead to what we do expect for that Bucs game. Maybe talk a little bit about the Steelers as well, the team the Chiefs are chasing. That's next. More with Nate Taylor here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I think that's probably the weirdest voice I've ever heard in my life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the Program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro. Jed Marshall running the operation. The big guy, Curtis Seabolt, off today. We talked to Nate Taylor. He's brought to you by my friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. You can find him at applausetheater.com. Surround sound, but so much more. Smart home technology, the ability to control everything right on your phone. Turn the lights on, turn the lights off, turn the fan on, turn the sprinkler on. Do whatever you want. Applause Custom Sight and Sound just makes your home that much better. See him online at applausetheater.com. What do you think? Are they catching the Steelers, the Chiefs? Do you like how many losses you got for this remaining schedule for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Thanksgiving night versus the Ravens. Then they get a few extra days to get ready for the Washington football team.
Right.
Follow that up with a trip.
Shout out to Alex Smith, though, for getting the win yesterday.
100%. 100%. Absolutely. They're in the playoff hunt.
They're in the
playoff
hunt. Go get first place, Alex, on Thursday. Go get it, baby.
I agree. Do your old club a favor and win the next one against the Steelers, too. Find a way.
Find a way.
At the Buffalo Bills, at the Bengals, home for the Colts, and at the Browns.
There's got to be two losses in there, right? I mean, right?
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. Like, I watched the Steelers yesterday via the red zone, and, you know, they got out of that game healthy, and that was the biggest – that's the biggest news of yesterday's game against Jacksonville, other than, hey, obviously Jacksonville's in the tank – and understandable. But look, Ben Roethlisberger's been dealing with a couple injuries. We've noted that before. He got out of that game, you know, relatively healthy. But obviously you're going to play 4 days later against the Ravens team that desperately needs that game. Like, this might be the last stand of this constituted Ravens football team because, you know, I was really impressed with Lamar yesterday. But sometimes you can play well and still lose. It's hard to tackle Derrick Henry. Apparently the Ravens haven't figured that out for two straight years now. But Lamar did what he had to do to get that game to overtime. And then, unfortunately, he took a sack, I think, on first down on a really nice pressure from the Titans. And then, obviously, it kind of steamrolled from there. I feel like the Steelers should probably lose to the Ravens. The Ravens need that game more. Like I just mentioned, either the Colts or the Bills are the most are the two interesting, you know, who needs that game more at that point? Because I think the division is all but wrapped up. Like, I know Cleveland's having a fun season. It'd be really cool if they made the playoffs as well. But, like, the Steelers know that they will have won the division, and then they're going to have to make a hard choice as to, like, do we really need home field advantage or do we need, like a legitimately healthy Ben Roethlisberger at age 38 to go through the playoffs to try to get to that AFC championship game? Or do you risk it and maybe take on some more injuries if you do get the one seed? So interesting month for Mike Tomlin on how he's going to try to
manage
that.
Do you think there's any choice there? I mean, you're fighting until you have the one seed, in my opinion. There's not even anything to think about.
Yeah.
Because if I get the one seed, I get a week off for Roethlisberger.
You get a week off. I understand that. But I also know, too, that the Steelers are in this weird, tricky situation because I just, like, the only thing is get Ben to the playoffs healthy. I don't care if you're the five seed. I don't care if you're the one seed. Like, just get Ben healthy with that collection of talent around him on the offensive side of the ball. I really like what T.J. Watt's done. But, I mean, yeah, you could say you need the one seed. I don't know that neither the Steelers nor the Chiefs need the one seed, obviously. It's a bonus, clearly. But they're going to have to manage it in a way where, you know, you're not trying to give, you know, like playing two games in 5 days is obviously insane. The league should never do it. But here we are in Ben Roethlisberger. Protect him at all costs against the Ravens team that loves to blitz. And, again, we'll just see where he is a month from now. But I think the Colts are obviously a legitimate team. I have to respect them for what they did yesterday in that bizarre game. And the Bills are still going to try to win the AFC. So maybe there's three losses. Who knows? Maybe there's 2-3 is my guess.
I said I'd put their win total at 13.5. So 2-3. I don't put it at 14.5 where they, you know, are only going to lose once. I think the good news about that schedule is all but Washington are AFC teams.
Yep.
And so the tiebreakers are head-to-head, which they don't play each other. And then it's record in conference. And right now the Chiefs already have a conference loss against the Raiders.
That's right.
If the Chiefs would finish 14-2 and one of those losses would come at Tampa or at New Orleans, which I think most people would say is most likely where they're going to drop another game, if the Steelers drop two, they figure to be two AFC teams, either the Ravens on Thursday night or at the Bills or at the Browns. Two of those three seem like the likely scenario.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, again, what the Steelers have done is impressive. They've only played, like, two legitimate teams? Two? Like, the Titans and, like, the Ravens? But yeah, we'll see. I know that it's good for the Chiefs regardless. Like, to have something in front of you to go after should be good for the Chiefs' psyche. In terms of motivating them. But, yeah, I feel like the Steelers aren't a perfect team. Don't expect them to go undefeated. It's just a matter of, like you mentioned, how it falls in the standings. And, again, I don't think they need the home field advantage. Like, it'd be helpful. It'd be nice. But do you think Patrick Mahomes can win three games in January before he gets to Tampa? Of course I can. Of course I think that.
I'm looking here. The next tiebreaker, if they would end up, if you're saying, what is it? It's common opponents.
Yes.
And the common opponents are Bills, Ravens. They play the Ravens twice. Chiefs only played them once.
Right.
So there's three games there. And then they play the Broncos and they play the Texans. So right now they're 3-0 in common opponent games. And the Chiefs are currently against those teams, likewise 3-0.
Yep.
But they have another one against the Ravens. They have at the Bills that'll be on there. So those are the games. You know, lose those two, and the Chiefs will be in the driver's seat.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. Nate, always great talking to you. Great stuff as always, my friend. Anything we should be looking for at the Athletic tomorrow, next day, day after?
Yeah, good question. I would just tell everybody, we're going to have a Black Friday sale. It's going to be incredibly cheap. I would encourage you to subscribe and to check it out for yourself because, look, I like having people who want to read about the Chiefs.
Yeah, and so much other great stuff. Alec Lewis,
yep.
You know, covering the Royals. It is great. I back you up 100% on that. Nate Taylor from The Athletic, we appreciate it, man. Have yourself a great Thanksgiving. All the best to your family, my friend.
Yes, you too, Saran, and to everybody at 810.
I appreciate it, buddy. I appreciate it. Nate Taylor here in the program.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
The Rams franchise is a collective 1-5 versus Tom Brady. When did the one win come? Great food from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue is yours if you know.